It's Beat the Bookie Podcast, Episode 9. Today I'm here with my friend John Alicia, aka Statsational, from DFS Army's own Beat the Bookie website. How you doing, John?
I'm doing well, man. How you doing?
Excellent, man. If you see here, I'm not in my usual environment. I'm visiting some family in Central Florida, so I'm in some sort of cockamamie bedroom here. But hopefully all the equipment is running well. I am at Alan Sislowski, and today on Beat the Bookie Podcast, we have a bunch of great announcements for you, but specifically that we are going to be launching our website this week, which is today's date is January 18th. So hopefully the website will be up and going by the end of the week. And that is going to be sportsbetarmy.com. How happy are you that we are finally going to move the Beat the Bookie service over to Sportsbet Army?
Yeah, it's exciting. So there's a lot of, you know, this is kind of step one. It's very early. There's a lot more good things coming. But, you know, I've seen what the site's going to look like. It looks really good. We're going to have some good tools on there. A lot of things to help the bettors out there.
Yeah. Now the looks that I've gotten at it looks unbelievable. The tools, the look of it. So we're really excited. And today's podcast is brought to you by our friends at Capricorn. Go check them out at capricorn.com. CAPPERCON.com. And that's a sports bettors convention that's happening January 26, 2020 in Newark, New Jersey. Just go to capricorn.com. We'll be there. DFS Army members will be there, and we're going to be helping celebrate this convention of sports bettors. We'll come back and talk about them after. But today, John, we are here to talk about one of the most asked questions in all of sports as we get closer to the Super Bowl, and that is hedging bets. I get some questions about it. I have some questions myself about it. And for everyone out there that is interested in hedging or doesn't even know what hedging, why don't you explain to them first what hedging is and then how we're going to apply it to this time of year and why it's important.
Okay. Well, when you hedge a bet, and I don't even know if hedging is the right word, but we'll use hedging for lack of a better terminology here. In the sports world, any sort of gambling, even if it's if trading, and this is where we do a lot of hedging in the trading world on Wall Street. But what you're doing is taking the opposite side of a bet in order to either minimize risk or lock in some sort of a profit. And that's how you'll generally see it being described in the gambling world. And what I often see and the questions I get are usually hedging out of futures types of bets. So with the Super Bowl coming up, we're a couple of weeks out, 3 weeks out, I guess, for the Super Bowl, I'll get a million questions on people who have a futures bet on one of the four teams that are remaining right now. And they want to know, well, should I start hedging my bet right now and locking in a profit? I don't know. We haven't discussed this ahead of time. I would say in about 95% of the cases, I am very much anti-hedging.
Yeah, no, I have heard you say that before, and I'm sure there is a mathematical reason behind it. But I interrupted you. I want to hear why you're against it. I want to know why you're against it.
And it is primarily mathematical, right? So, firstly, you have to go back to when you actually put that first bet in. What was your logic? Let's just go on to the premise that this is a Super Bowl bet. And let's say you're a Tennessee Titans.
Well, here, can
fan.
I
go ahead? Yeah, go.
Let me give you a more probable scenario. In fact, I know of somebody that made this bet. They made in the preseason. They made a $1,000 40-1 bet on San Francisco to win the Super Bowl. So here we are, the Final Four. What should they do?
Okay, yeah. Now that's actually a really good example. Now I don't know this person. I don't know what their bankroll is, and I don't know what their typical unit size is. All right, but $1,000 future bet of 40-1 is a pretty substantial bet.
Yeah, their unit size is probably from $50 to $200. Now I know that's a wide range, but that's probably their range of betting.
Okay, so they're betting $50 to $200 on a game typically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then they took $1,000 bet on a future.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so right off the bat, that just doesn't make any sense. And this is what I typically run into, right? It just doesn't make sense because why are you risking now? And you've got to go back to stuff I've talked about on bankroll management and risk management. I'm not going to go too in detail or too in depth on that right now. But if you go back and look on that stuff, you'll understand where I'm coming from. So again, if you have a bankroll, if you're a $50 to a $200 player, you should have about a $10,000 bankroll. If that was the case, and I'm going to assume none of these steps were taken by your friend. If that's the case, betting $1,000 on something that's 40-1 is just insanity, because now you're risking 10% of your bankroll on something that's going to happen very infrequently at 40-1. Even the fact that San Francisco is there right now, they're still a long shot to win the Super Bowl. Right?
Because they're going to be a dog in the Super Bowl. Right. Presumably, if they play Kansas City.
Well, you're still not favored. You're still not getting a minus money on them, right? To win the Super Bowl. And even if it is, it's minor. You're still.
Right, let's go with the.
So let's just take the premise.
Yeah.
That they're, even if they were a plurality favorite. So the premise is now you've risked $1,000. Now often what I'll see is you say your friend's a $500 to $200 player. Maybe they played $100 on the future at 40-1. Even that amount is too much. So we really need to go back in time to the day you put that future bet on before we can make before we can actually give some advice. And I used to get this in trading all the time. People often will come to you with they're in a bad position. They bought a stock, they bought a currency pair, and they're getting killed on it. And now they want to know what they should do. You know, it's. I'm always like, well, go back in time and not put that trade on. That's the best advice I can give you. It's always hard. People always want advice when they're in a bad situation. In this case, of course, he's in a good situation, but he hasn't gotten there yet. But we want to go back in time now, and we want to put on the proper size bet, because then this doesn't become as big a question. So if you're betting 40-1. Shot, a 50-1 shot, what I always recommend is you're looking to bet to win a unit size. So if his, let's say $200 is his unit size at 40-1, he should have been putting in a $5 bet as opposed to a $1,000. But that's how we're talking about a 200 time difference.
Well, get out of the expert's mind for a minute, which it's hard because that's who you are. You're a trained professional in sports wagering, and that's why you're one of the lead coaches over at Beat the Bookie. But okay, I'm passionate about this bet. I see my lottery ticket. I've come into a little extra money, and hey, if I throw this $1,000 down and I really feel like there's a possibility, I'm going to be able to finally afford that great car. It's a lottery ticket. It's it's probably more common. Now, again, we know that that's not logical betting based on what you just said. But now let's get back into, like you said here, where we have that $1,000 at 40-1 in San Francisco. We're in the final four. Is hedging a good idea? What should we do? What does this guy do at this point?
If I overbet it like he did, then I would absolutely say you need to hedge that bet because – you're lucky now to be in a situation where you can hedge. And we can only hedge, by the way, in sports. You can do it at any time, but it's only makes remote sense when you're in a good situation. And by good situation, that means, of course, your team has now gotten to the point where they're not 40-1 anymore. I don't have the odds in front of me, but you know, now they're significantly lower than 40-1, obviously. So you can't start hedging anything when you bet something at 40-1 and now it's 80-1. It just doesn't make any sense. When it's 40-1 and now it's even money, of course, now you can start thinking about putting a hedge in. But so in his particular situation, I would say absolutely you'd want to hedge. And by hedging, because he risked so much, I would want to make sure that I got my risk, my $1,000 at a minimum back. And to do that, in his case, I would take the Green Bay side plus the points.
Plus the points, not the money line.
No, I would take it plus the points because now I have a chance to not only win my bet I could win my futures and still get paid on the plus 7 points that I'm going to get.
Right. Green Bay. Okay. Yeah. Just for the
argument, I would risk $1,000 there
right now. Okay. San Francisco to win the Super Bowl today, as of January 18th, is plus 130.
Right. So like I said, they're still a dog to win the Super Bowl. While sure, they're in a very envious position right here. They're a 7-point favorite here going into the championship game. Still a dog. So, you still have to win two games. Quite possibly going to be an underdog in the Super Bowl. I do think they're going to be a favorite. I believe what I saw was they're going to be a small favorite either way. Well, they'll be a bigger favorite against Tennessee, but a small favorite against Kansas City. But regardless of that, of all of that, again, because he risked so much, I would say, yes, I'd want to make sure I don't lose anything here. And I'd want to take a now, if you want to do more than that and you want to take an even larger bet size, by all means, go ahead and guarantee yourself some profit. But I would say bet the spread line, because now I can hit a middle and I can catch both.
Okay, let's pull back a second. Let's get out of this guy's specific situation. Now, you're getting a ton of questions in the Beat the Bookie Slack, which is soon to be the Sports Bet Army Slack. And people are asking you, hey, should I hedge? Let's get a 10,000 foot view. Let's try to give some advice that maybe could be spread amongst all of these. I know every specific situation is different, but is hedging a good idea in general? And if why or why not?
Okay, so in general, it's not, because the more bets we make, we lower our expected value. All right, so I'm going to not get into the deep math of it, but you, as you should know, there's juice, and we've talked about this, there's juice on every single bet you make. And the more often you bet, the more juice you're going to have to pay. So let's just assume here that our futures bet was made because we have a model or a system or something. Let's give the better the benefit of the doubt, and they saw value in that future bet beyond the juice that the books are taking. Now, the books on these futures, they scalp these things way more than they would on a regular bet. You're generally going to be a minus 110, right? So there's going to be a small amount of juice taken on an average NFL game or NBA game, something like that. That juice on these futures is really hidden. And the bigger the dog you get, a lot, oftentimes, there's even more juice in there. And it's really hard to see just how much juice or how much of a big the house is taking. So with that said, let's just assume that we got ourselves in an envious position. We like the value that we were getting on San Francisco here, in, let's say in that case, and we put a and we made a sound bet based on our bankroll. Why in that case then would we now want to put another bet on that is a negative EV play? And now we're taking out, we're removing profit. We're giving a piece of our expected value back to the house. So you're in a situation. Let's just make the numbers even and stick with the San Francisco. Let's just say they're even money right now to win the Super Bowl. If you put, if you put a bet on that, if you do the EV calculations based on they have a 50-50 chance to win the Super Bowl, and you put a, let's say it was a $100 bet, 50% of the time you're going to lose $100 and 50% of the time you're going to win $4,000 right now. So your EV here is $3,950.
$3,950. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, that's even math. I mean, that's pretty easy to follow.
So it's really, now if you start adding in hedging, and I'm not going to do all the different iterations of that, you can do that on your own. But what you're going to do is you're going to start incorporating juice into the all these additional bets, and you're going to come up with a number that's lower than $3,950. So why pay back the house? Now, I understand in these future bets, you've got such a chance to win, 40 times your money here, let's say on San Francisco, and that opportunity doesn't happen all that often. So you say, you know what, I'm willing to pay a little bit in order to secure some profits here.
You're willing to raise your floor and lower your ceiling.
That's right. And that, as long as you understand that's what you're doing, like, listen, I'm paying a fee, which is what it is. I'm going to pay a fee in order to lock in some profits. Now, you see this done in poker, although you're not paying a fee to do it. If you ever watch high stakes poker on TV and they run the hands two times, three times, after two guys or, usually just two guys get all in, and there's another card to come or two cards to come, whatever the case may be, and they'll say, well, let's run it two times or three times. What they're doing is essentially limiting the variability and the amount of swings, the swings that they're going to have. So they're bringing everything closer to what the true probability is. So if you're an 80% favorite, the more often you run it, you're going to get back 80% of the pot. It's another way of saying, hey, listen, I'm an 80% favorite here. Let's not run it at all. Just give me 80% of the pot. I'll give you 20% of the pot and we'll call it a day. That's essentially what you're doing the more often you run it, because you're going to get closer to the true number.
Yeah, that's a great poker analogy. And, another thing that comes to mind is basically cashing out of your 401k a little early, paying a penalty, getting some profit, limiting the upside. I mean, we could think of 1,000 examples of these things.
Yeah. So what I often, though, to me, what you have to ask yourself is, why am I doing it? Now, why did I make the bet in the first place? And let me go back just another step. The one thing I tell people is, like right now we're like, again, we're going to use the football analogy and we're heading into the championship games and someone wants to start hedging now. And I say, well, why didn't you bet this team to win the NFC? Why'd you bet them to win the Super Bowl? If your goal was to start hedging out of this bet, then why not bet them to win the NFC? Because in August, when we made the bet, we had this thing like, man, this would be great if this hits, like, you know, 40-1, 50-1, 60-1. Like, yeah, if I hit this, it's going to be great. But you never were honest with yourself.
Right. Now you start thinking about that swimming pool that you're going to put.
That's right. That's right. You were never honest with yourself in the beginning. And again, you didn't put the proper bet size on in the beginning. So now you're in a situation where it's really nervous. Imagine that same guy put a $5 bet. He's not even thinking about hedging that bet right now.
No, you let it ride.
That's it. You're going to let it ride, which is mathematically the proper way to be doing this. So if you put multiple bets in at a proper size, and I get when you're doing it casually, like we talked about, sometimes you're going to do stupid things. I play craps. I don't go there and expect to win. It's casual. I try to play the best I can, but I understand that I'm going to go there. I'm going to lose, you know, $500, $1,000, whatever the case is. And that's part of my entertainment. But we're coming at this from if you want to do this properly, you need those future bet sizes need to be scaled back and they need to be a to win amount. I bet futures every week on golf, and futures don't have to be months and months out. Golf is, you know, just a 4-day weekend for golf bets. Now, every time I have a guy leading the tournament that I bet after like the second round, I don't go and run and say, oh, right, let me see if I can right. hedge out of it.
Right. Right?
Because I'm not over betting. Right. That's it. Right. I'm trying to win that bet. So
absolutely.
It goes back to properly assessing why it was that you got in and putting the proper amount on. So assuming you did that, you're not going to want to be hedging out of these bets. Now, there's a situation where you very well may have a strategy, and I've seen this implemented, where in the beginning of a season, let's say NFL again, you take the Miami Dolphins on their total wins, and you take them as an under. So what I'm saying is you're generally going to do this with the good teams you're going to bet over, and the bad teams you're going to bet an under their win total. So top of my head, I don't remember what Miami was. Let's say it was 3.5 wins or 4 wins or something like that was their total before the season. You bet that under, and then consequently what you're going to do is start betting them because you know they're going to be an underdog in just about every game they play. You're doing it with the intention of betting against them on the point spread. Or betting with them on the point spread, I should say, every single week. So you've bet them under their wins, and you're hoping that they lose games, but they lose by less than the points because you're going to have huge point spreads in their games. And that's a system. So now that's a strategy where you're not going to necessarily – maybe you're going to bet a little bit higher because you now have the intention of hedging. When we do this in trading on Wall Street – oftentimes it's associated with an option, and I don't want to get into it too deep a discussion, but if you're familiar at all with options and put very vanilla options, puts and calls, you're going to risk a higher amount if you're hedging that with the underlying asset. In other words, I'm going to put on a much greater position if I'm buying, let's say, puts where I'm looking for the stock to go down. If I'm buying Google puts where I'm looking for that to come down, I'm going to do it for a much higher amount. Notional amount, if I know I'm going to be hedging behind that, I'm going to put a hedge underneath. If I'm not hedging this at all, I can't put as high a position on. Okay. Same thing here in the game. If I know ahead of time, yes, this is going to be a hedge bet, then I say, okay, fine. I'm going to increase my size. If I have no intention of hedging, then my size needs to be lower. So you need to know that. You need to have the bet planned out ahead of time.
Is that what happened when they were, you know, when the crash happened with the housing market, when they were doing, what were those bets called they were making against their original loans? What were the, I'm not saying it right, but I'm saying is they were making these bets on the housing market, and then all the houses went underwater because they were making bets against that those people would be able to make payments. Do you recall what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Well, what you had in that situation was people were putting a basket of these mortgages together.
Yeah.
And it gets complicated, but what they were doing was buying a lot of, they were tossing in a lot of really crappy mortgages into good mortgages and then reselling them.
Okay. All right.
And they're baskets. And so they were bringing down, so it was kind of hidden in there. The fact that there were riskier riskier loans that were mixed in to these more, let's say, A quality loans.
Right. And then you were talking about like the Miami situation where you're hedging against these large point spreads, but that theory, you know, that could have gone, that strategy probably went out the window as Miami improved during the year and those point spreads became smaller. You know, we alluded to it a little bit in the beginning of the podcast, but we were talking about our friends over at Capricorn.com who are running a sports wagering convention for consumers. And right now they've just made it free. I'm going to do their read, but I want to come back and talk to you about it real quick because this is something really interesting to me. So if you want to talk about making money from Super Bowl props, then there is a live event on Sunday, January 26th in Newark, New Jersey called Capricorn.com. That's CapricornCon.com. One more time. I'll say it for you, John. It's CapricornCon.com. They're having a live panel with three professional bettors. You'll get the winning plays from three of the best bettors in the business. Go to Capricorn.com for all the details. You can also win a free entry into the Westgate Super Contest worth $2,000 along with some other great prizes for attending, including a free month of our service at sportsbetarmy.com. We've just added that to the giveaway pool. Do you want to make some money betting on Super Bowl this year? Then you should be attending Capricorn.com on January 26th in Newark, New Jersey. Full details can be found at Capricorn.com. John, this is a convention for passionate sports bettors that's happening in Newark, New Jersey. So if you are in Pennsylvania, Delaware, Connecticut, New York, it's right across the street from Newark Penn Station at the Doubletree Hotel. I highly recommend you going. The Geek from DFS Army, our own fearless leader, he'll be there hanging out. And they have just, for a limited time, for this convention, made it free to go. And they're also having some great guest speakers, included Max DeLore. He's going to be there of DFS fame and now sports bettor extraordinaire. Are you thinking about flying back to New York to check out the Capricorn?
It's possible. I'm going to be on a cruise. So it's going to be a little tight for me. I'm going to see what when I get back from this. I'm getting back like the night before.
Okay, so it's going
to
be tough.
So it's going to be a little tough for me, but I would like to go. It sounds like a lot of fun. And I mentioned this on the last pod we did. It's, I think any chance you have to interact and get to pick the brains of people who do this, either for a living or just casual people like you may be in the morning, you'll always be able to learn something, whether you hear something that doesn't make any sense to you in a negative way, or if it doesn't make any sense to you in a good way. Just talking with other like-minded people and people in this industry, I think, is going to benefit everybody.
Yeah, so go check them out if you're in that area. It's free to go to. It's going to be an amazing event. All right, John, back to hedging. All right, so hedging bets in general. I've done it as a casual sports wager. And you're right, like on single unit bets that are, you know, say I took, like, for example, I told you already, I took San Francisco in the beginning of the playoffs at a plus 350. But I threw $25 on them. So it's 25 to win 88. There's no hedge here.
Right.
It's just play it out, right? I mean, so for those who have done, you know, $200 or less bets, just let it ride. That was basically what our conclusion was.
It is. And I think the main thing is to get into to get out of this is, when you made the original bet, what was your intention? When you made that bet, your intention was to see it through.
Right.
Not to, because you weren't getting nervous yet because they didn't get this far yet. It's what seems to happen is there's a psychology. I'm a big proponent of like tapping into why is your brain putting you in this situation? Why is your brain thinking a certain way? It's so ingrained in us to not lose things. I think it's just evolutionary biology, because we've gone through the history of human beings. Have been one where we have not had all that much. I mean, your day-to-day life not that long ago was just waking up, trying to find food, doing it, eating, going to bed, and doing it again the next day. Like, resources were very limited for most people who've lived on this earth. So losing resources is something that we are inherently, it's in our DNA. It just doesn't sit well, which is why risk-taking is such a difficult endeavor for most people. And losing is, you know, if you want to motivate somebody, what's the best way to motivate somebody? If you have a business and you want to motivate your employees, now this is a difficult thing to do, let's say in most businesses, but if you give a bonus for people showing up, let's say your workday starts at 9 o'clock, and you say the employee makes $100 a day, and you say, listen, I'm going to give you $5 a day extra for every day you show up at 9 o'clock. Or I'm going to pay you $125, but I'm going to take $5 away every day you show up past 9 o'clock. Now, which one do you think is going to be more effective?
I mean, obviously the first one, right? Positive reinforcement and incentive.
That's actually incorrect.
Interesting. Right.
Because I've got the $125. I've got that money and I don't want to lose it.
That makes total sense. Right. You're right. The fear of punishment is going to be greater than
It's the fear of losing.
The fear of losing, right. The fear, that's amazing that you said that. And I want to explore this for a second, because if I'm a little tired one day, I'm like, hey, you know what? I'll show up a little late. It's only going to cost me $5. I won't get the $5. I never had it in the first
place. That was the key point. So you never had the $5. I've talked about this in other aspects.
Wow. Mind-blowing.
Think about this, okay? Think about the game Deal or No Deal. Okay, we've all seen Deal or No Deal on TV.
I play it on the computer still.
Yeah. Now you'll see someone, a teacher, and there you go, teacher making a modest salary, and
a shit salary, by the way.
They're up. Let's say they have a chance now to take $150,000, or go ahead and keep playing the game.
And I always call the people morons for keep playing the game.
That's right, but. It's amazing the psychology, right? Right. This might be three times their salary yearly. So this might be 3 years worth of salary to this person. Yet they're going to continue because that $1 million is still out there, or that $500,000 is still out there.
And they never possessed the 150. If they would have
gave you that 150 and you went home for a week and we said, hey, we're going to, let's say it was a live show and that's it. At the end of the show, you go home, but here's the check for 150. Come back next week, and now let's play the game. You've got the one. Once you have the 150 in your hands, it becomes it becomes a totally different scenario. When we're playing, it's almost like it's the psychology of having chips in a casino. Where it's not really money. I've got chips. It's not cash. That chip, when it's in your bank account or it's in your pocket, it feels a whole lot differently than we're playing with hypothetical numbers. So while that plays a trick on you, I try to play tricks on myself to counter that. So, but you can't do that unless you totally understand what it is, what forces are driving you to act impulsively or in the way that you're acting, and you're not acting maybe in a rational fashion as you normally would.
So it's funny. I'll tell you a brief short story about how I overcame that that exact scenario. So I used to watch Deal or No Deal, and I would curse them for not taking the 150 or whatever it was. So one time I actually walked into, do you remember Cash Cab?
Oh, yes.
So I was in a cash cab. Like, I was in there. I was on a third date with my now wife, right? And we walk in, it's cash cab. And we're doing the game. And, you're coming out of a restaurant. We're drunk. But we're answering the questions. And at the end of cash cab, if you remember, they used to say you could take the money you've won and risk it all on one question. And you get, like, five extra money or whatever it is. Or just take, the modest but significant sum. And we had won $750, correct? And I think there was where you can get one question, one shot, and you turn it into $3,000. And knowing and having this psychology from watching the game, we took the money. We went the nutless way and we took the money. And, they give you the question anyway. And of course we got it wrong and we were happy, but you're right. It's amazing because usually people operate in the opposite way.
Yeah. In those situations, people say, well, I came in, I came in here with nothing anyway, and I'm going out.
Right.
But no, you actually have 700. That's actually your money right now.
Yeah. No, it was funny. I will post the tape. I have it on digital. I'll show you the tape one time.
Yeah, I would love to see it. But it's people who don't. Now, how many times have you bet $750?
Zero.
Okay.
Oh, actually, wait a second. Let me backtrack. A handful of times. Like five
it's
times.
It's not your thing. Yeah. Right. It's not your thing to bet $750. And probably a lot of people in those situations, it's not their thing. And I know it's not most people's thing to bet $100,000 or $150,000 like they might do on Deal or No Deal, yet they do it. It's really a bet. That was your money. It's your money as soon as you say, I'm done.
Unbelievable.
Or as my grandmother used to watch the game, and she kind of would mix it up, and she would say, you know, no deal, take the money. So she would get that a little, she would get that a little bit. She'd just yell at the TV, no deal, take the money. But
but when you're in it, it's a whole different thing. The lights are shining.
It's a psychology.
Yeah.
Again, it goes back to understand, like, trick yourself into this. And I'm a believer of this in all aspects of life where, you know, you don't want to put yourself in, you can not be in that situation, but psychologically put yourself in that situation. Just like, I've spoke about before where they, I had read about how most self-made millionaires were people who've had either, they've just hit a rock bottom place in their life, some sort of tragedy. Now, I'm not saying you need to have some sort of a tragedy to achieve, let's say, financial success in life, but put yourself mentally, why does that happen? We're willing to take more risks when we've got nothing to lose, or so we believe in our mind that we have nothing to lose. We're willing to take greater risks. So why not, you know, try to tap into that mentality? It's the same thing where when you're losing, you're in a losing streak in betting, and that's apropos, obviously, to what we do. You get to a point, you will always risk more on losing streaks than most people will risk more when they're down money than when they're up money.
Yeah, that's happened to me before in casinos and blackjack, and all of a sudden six, seven, eight hands in a row of 10, 15, $25 hands. All of a sudden I was like, wait, did I just put $300 on a hand here? What the fuck?
It happens. Yeah. It happens all the time. People do that. You're playing $10 blackjack. You're $500 down in the hole. Next thing you know, you're playing $100 a hand. If you were $500 up, you're sitting there counting the chips going, when should I walk away? Like, you know, you're starting to hoard chips. You put them in your pocket. You're down 300. All you're doing is, how much do I, like, can I hit the ATM now before midnight and get more cash out of the ATM? You know, you're thinking of ways, can I borrow a couple of bucks from, my wife, girlfriend, buddy, whatever it is to play a little bit more. You're up money and you're saying, you're trying to hoard it. And again, this goes back to our evolution, the evolutionary psychology. We want to hoard money. We want to hoard resources when we have them. And when we don't, we say, well, if I lose 200 or 300 or 500, what's the difference? And I say the difference is $100 or $300. That's the difference. So, but we don't put ourselves in that mentality.
Yeah. No. And something else that struck me when you said that was the way certain NFL teams play. For example, the Seattle Seahawks, they play amazing in the third and fourth quarter when they're up against it. Like, why not have Russell Wilson?
That's a great point. So this was actually spoken about, is written about in the Scorecasting book that I've spoken about before. And you'll see it now in the NBA is actually a really good example of it. Remember all the time, I mean, if you watch basketball, whether it's college, NBA, really a lot of times in the NBA, they always talk about how teams make a run. There's always going to be a run. We don't expect that run. You're down 15, really. You know, and in the NBA where you're dealing with professionals and teams are a little closer in talent, you're going to see those runs happen quite a bit. Why do those runs happen? Because teams start taking more risks. Now, we're in a time in the NBA where the three-point shot is the predominant shot, but especially you go back in the 90s, the early 2000s, and you had situations where teams would go down by a lot of points, and then they would start taking a lot more threes. They were willing to take what seemed to be a riskier shot. They're not going to take the two-point shot. They're going to take the three-point shot in order to get themselves back into that game. So you see what I'm saying there. Teams are willing to take more risk when they're down. Now, what we're starting to learn through analytics is that risk is something that should be taken from the opening tip in the NBA. Right. We should be taking more threes is what the analytics have told us. But if you looked in the past, the reason teams would make a run is because they took riskier shots. Conversely, the other team's trying to sit on that lead. You know, golfers, this happens with golfers. You know, you get a lead in golf. And now your goal, you know, it's Sunday of the Masters. You slept on a two-stroke lead. Now your goal is, how do I maintain that lead, as opposed to how did I get to the two-stroke lead to begin with? I got there by being aggressive, you know, when you can, when it warrants, as opposed to I'm just going to play this safe all day. Well, the guys behind you are not playing safe. And there's maybe a dozen of them chasing you. Yeah. And one of them is going to find that his risk is going to pay off, and he's going to be hot that day, and they're going to run you down. I mean, it happens in all aspects of sports. One other thing that drives me nuts, and I think it kind of fits into this, is the team. When you've got to put yourself again in that mentality. Think about when you bet a game, and it's fourth down and one for your team, and they're in a situation, you know, whatever the score situation is, and you're sitting there. Do you want them to go? Let's say it's your team and it's fourth and one, and you bet the game. You bet the other team, and you're winning your bet right now. But if that other team kicks a field goal or scores a touchdown,
the Houston Kansas City game. This played out when Houston was up 21-0. If you were on the Kansas City side, you wanted them to kick a field goal.
That's right. And quote. That's right. Exactly. So you want what I always say is put yourself on the other. In the other shoes. If you were on the other team, what do you want? What would you want? Are you nervous right now that this team's going for two to win the game? Right? If your team is going for two to win a game and you're questioning that decision, well, what if you were the team, what if your favorite team or the team you bet or whatever the case is, was the team defending the two-point play? You know, so try to flip, do this when you're watching games now, do this and put yourself on the other team. In the mindset of that other team, and do you want that to be? And I say this because in these, we'll go back to these hedging and the future bets. If you were the one who took the bet, in other words, you played bookie to your friend, and I'm not going to say the $1,000 situation may be extreme. You don't want to.
That's pay a for different. That. That's a totally
you,
unique.
You don't situation. Want to pay $40,000 out, but let's say it was a more reasonable bet. You know, it was a $20 bet or something like that. Think about, you may want, as the bookie, as yourself, you might be hoping that person hedges out of this bet because that's limiting the risk that you're taking here on this. So put yourself on the other shoes, in the other person's shoes, and say, yeah, you know what? I don't mind getting out of this bet right now at a cheaper price because I don't like it.
I'm fascinated by the psychology that you identified a few minutes ago. I think that is just, it's unbelievable. And these human behaviors are all part of what we do. And this is the kind of stuff that we talk about over at Beat the Bookie at soon-to-be sportsbetrb.com. And you'll have full access to John and all the other coaches. These conversations go on all day in our Slack chat. So come on over, join the community. And also what I wanted to talk about, since we were talking about hedging and Super Bowl and props, is, John, have you played Thrive Fantasy yet? They're a new sports prop betting game. We were talking about it a little bit offline.
Yeah, you just mentioned it to me. And as you were saying it, I signed up for it. So I've been I'm planning on trying it out this weekend. It looks really fascinating to me.
Yeah, what Thrive Fantasy is, for those of our listeners, it's a prop betting game. Go and download their app. It's Thrive, T-H-R-I-V-E, Fantasy. And they give you 20 options, and you pick either or. Who will have more? Will Patrick Mahomes have over 2.5 touchdowns or under? And then you get points for each one. And they have, not only do they have football for this weekend, they have, you know, daily basketball, they have golf, and now they've even added esports. So go check out our friends at Thrive Fantasy. And if you are a subscriber to the DFS Army podcast, our own Cash Keg has done a full Thrive Fantasy episode where he gives his picks for the championship weekend. So go download that podcast as well and check out Thrive Fantasy. And John, I know you are the master of figuring out strategy for games. So when we come back next week, I'm interested to see how you've broken their game and, of course, have built your bankroll on that. All right. Well, we did it again. We talked about hedging. And we tangent it off into all these great psychological things, which I enjoy this conversation. I mean, it's really stimulating to my mind when you talk about sports wagering. And anyone listening to this podcast that is into sports wagering or in some capacity, they're a new sports wagerer or they're an experienced one. And I am just endlessly fascinated by the psychology of it. I want to explore that more in a future podcast. So John's message, I think, is, don't hedge as a general philosophy. Every situation is specific. And if you have any personal questions about hedging, come over to Beat the Bookie, come into our Slack chat and ask John at Statsational on Twitter. And we will happily get you signed up there. Use code BTB, that's Beat the Bookie, for 20% off for life. Or on Twitter, come ask us about how you can get a 2 free months with Beat the Bookie when you deposit into one of our affiliated sports books. John, anything else to close on here? Anything else to add?
No, I think we summed up hedging pretty well there. So I think we hit on some good topics.
All right. All right. So check out any of our other Beat the Bookie podcasts. Most of them are evergreen. This one was a little bit more specific to this weekend. We'll be back probably next week with another great topic. I'm at Alan Soslowski, season long says, for my friend John Alicia. I don't like when Kevin calls you Alessia. It's Alicia, a.k.a. Yes. Statsational. Check him out on Twitter. Check him out at Beat the Bookie. And we'll see you next time, everybody.